Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. The UK has now been in lockdown for almost a week as part of the fight against the coronavirus. Sophie Ridge spoke to the Cabinet Office Minister Michael Gove about how long the lockdown period could last.
Professor Neil Ferguson of Imperial, one of the advisers, of course, the government's following very closely, has said that he expects the lockdown to last until early June. Is that a fair expectation?
Well, as I say, there are different projections as to how long the lockdown might last, but it's not the case that the length of the lockdown is something that is absolutely fixed. It depends on all of our behaviour. We can, if we follow the guidelines, we can deal more effectively with the spread of the disease. The models are projections. And, of course, we adjust our action on the basis of behaviour, on the basis of data, on the basis of facts, on the basis of science. But people should, as the Prime Minister's letter today absolutely underlines, recognise that the situation will get worse before it gets better. And that is why it is so important that all of us play our part. It's also why it's so inspiring that those leading the NHS have been able to increase capacity, increase the number of beds available, and ensure that we can be in a better position to deal with the increased level of infection and indeed the increased level of mortality that is coming.
Andrew Marr asked Gove about the government's efforts to test key workers for the virus.
What proportion of NHS staff have been infected or are self-isolating and not at work at the moment?
There are a significant number. I can't give you an exact percentage, but there are a significant number of those who are self-isolating. One of the reasons why we're determined to increase the number of tests, and in particular, so as the Prime Minister made clear on Friday,
how many are
increase
being
the
tested?
Number of... Well, we had 10,000 tests yesterday. This is just ahead of the deadline that was set by the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock. We've managed to significantly increase testing, and we'll be doing more in the course of this week. It's also the case that Boots have made sure that they can increase the number of drive-in test facilities. The managing director of Boots, Sebastian James, has introduced these facilities. They allow NHS workers, if they have symptoms, to get tested in real time. A number of these drive-in centres have been established. More are being established this week, and that is in parallel to the other efforts that we're making in order to increase the amount of testing available.
Do you have priorities about who should be tested first? Obviously, NHS staff are right at the top of the list, but then there are lots of other key public sector workers, Deliveroo drivers bringing food to people, bin men, crucially, cleaners and others. Are those key workers going to be tested as a matter of urgency as well to keep the country running?
Yes, but the top priority are those who are working in the National Health Service and in social care. The doctors, the nurses, the cleaners, everyone who works in our hospitals and in social care, they are the absolute top priority. There are also, as you quite rightly point out, people who are working in our prisons, people who are working in local government, people who are working in the front line of giving us food. We also want to ensure that testing extends to them as well. But absolutely top of the list are those who work in our National Health Service and in social care.
Ma also pressed Gove on why the UK was not signed up to an EU procurement scheme for ventilators and other important medical equipment.
Let me ask you about the EU procurement scheme, which would have allowed Britain to get more and cheaper equipment we desperately need and which we have not taken part in. Can you explain to us in clear terms why we haven't taken part in that scheme?
I will try to, yes. There was some confusion over our involvement in that scheme, but I've talked to senior figures in the NHS and they've reassured me that there is nothing that we would have, that we can't do as an independent nation that being part of that scheme would have allowed us to do. And critically, when it comes to ventilator capacity, we have 8,000 ventilators available in the NHS now. That's as a result of changing the way in which NHS hospitals work and also securing capacity from the private sector. And we have at least 8,000 ventilators coming on stream, which we have managed to secure from abroad. Some of the ventilators that are coming from abroad are coming from other EU nations, some from beyond that. And, of course, we are ramping up domestic production of ventilators. And there have been a number of companies, Dyson, McLaren, Rolls-Royce and others, that have all been involved.
On Friday, Boris Johnson confirmed that he had tested positive for the coronavirus and was self-isolating in his flat in Downing Street. Ridge asked Tony Blair whether the job could still be done from the Prime Minister's living room.
Well, you can do. I mean, look, we've got the technology to be able to link people up. I mean, I've been, because my institute is working with countries around the world, and we've repurposed the entire institute for our teams that are in country to work with governments there. So I'm having virtual conversations, online conversations with people the entire time. Now, it's perfectly possible to do that. It depends how ill he is. But if I, and again, I offer this not as criticism, because I really think everybody in government will be doing everything they possibly can. But I think what you find in these situations, I went through a much, much milder thing with foot and mouth disease, and my institute also worked throughout the Ebola crisis in West Africa. It is always around logistics and procurement. What you find in these situations is that you get bottlenecks, not about what you think you should do, because you can usually work that out, but how you do it, how you source equipment, how you get supplies, how you make systems move fast. And the only thing I would say on that, and it's really, the Prime Minister is perfectly able to direct this, provided his health has not deteriorated, but it's really about how you put the most capable people in charge of those elements of logistics and procurement.
The Labour leadership candidate Rebecca Long-Bailey criticised the government for not doing enough to halt the spread of the virus.
Well, the stakes couldn't be higher. This is about saving lives. And in order to save those lives, we need to have an economic response that makes sure that people are financially secure in their homes. And what the government's announced so far has been very welcome, but there are a number of gaps, and it's forced many workers and many self-employed people to choose between their health and their financial situation, and that's not acceptable. So, for example, this week, we know that Boris Johnson told us that we needed to stay in our homes and we should only leave to get essential provisions, to care for vulnerable relatives, or to go to work if we couldn't work from home. And when you look at the government's guidance on their website, it stated that if you can't work from home, essentially, you should go to work. And they've stated that, indeed, it's important for business to carry on. Now, there are workers right across the country this week who've been going to construction sites, warehouses, call centres, where their health is being put at significant risk. And the government needs to now be very clear about what non-essential and essential work is and make sure that those workers are at home if they're not providing an essential function and that they're financially protected.
And finally, with the leadership result due to be announced on Saturday, Ridge asked Long-Bailey about a highly unusual feature of this year's contest.
There's been lots of changes, of course, to the way that the leadership contest is run because of coronavirus. Is it right that you've been asked to record a victory video just in case? And isn't that going to be a little bit awkward?
I think it's trying to deal with these strange times and have an announcement on the leadership contest that our members and the public can view from their homes, really. It's logistically quite challenging. And I think we've all been asked to do this victory speech so that it can be sent out over the airwaves as quickly as possible after we win. I haven't done mine yet, by the way.
Is it, are you going to feel a little bit awkward when you record it, though, before knowing the result?
It's going to be a bit bizarre, yeah.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and we also have a special offer. You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks in print and online for just £12, and you'll receive a free £20 voucher to spend at Amazon. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.